DW Africa Link.
It can be so frustrating when you can't find a job to make ends meet. You've studied hard, graduated, and are looking for a government job. But instead of skills and qualifications, you're told to pay a bribe for the job.
I did social works and social administration, but my dear, getting a job is a very, very hard thing. If you do not bribe to enter, be it government or private, you cannot get a job.
I think that has become sort of like a culture that has been embraced, which is very wrong, because you study knowing so well that you understand what you're doing, you're qualified, but also at the back of your mind, you know it's very hard to get a job.
That's the reality for thousands of job seekers in Uganda. According to a new report, more than 130,000 civil servants paid their way into government jobs. That's about 35% of the public workforce. And to make matters even worse, many of those hired lacked the right qualifications. So what happens to a nation when merit is replaced with money? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Uganda's Inspector General of Government, Betty Kamya, says corruption in public service recruitment is now systemic. According to some reports, Uganda loses around $400 million every year to corruption, nearly 10% of the national budget. The damage caused by this is far-reaching. Poor service delivery, broken infrastructure, and citizens losing trust in government. Let's get more from Dr. Tom Wanyakara, a lecturer in public policy at Uganda Management Institute. I also have my colleague Frank Yiga, DW correspondent in Kampala, Uganda. Welcome both of you to Africa Link. Frank, does this report come as a surprise or a shock in Uganda?
Okay, so the news of bribery does not come as a surprise to many Ugandans, but when you look at the figures, the statistics of 35% of public workforce, you know, having bribed, it's quite interesting and actually it's quite shocking, because we knew this was happening year in, year out, but we didn't know the magnitude of it. And if you also to base on the report from the Uganda Bureau of Statistics, saying that Uganda has over 480,000 public employees and also over 334,000 civil servants across all sectors. Say government agencies, we have the ministries, the health, education, agriculture, and all that. It beats one understanding to know that, you know, a bigger number of those employees have fake academic papers. And it also disturbs when you hear that someone else out there is doing a job that is meant for you, who is qualified and skilled. So that's where the trouble is.
Right, right. Let me come to you, Tom, because I dare say you have many more years of experience compared to Frank and myself. You've worked for decades in the public sector. I wonder, when you compare it to your days, how that makes you feel. Is that the norm? Is that how it was? Or what do you make of that?
I think it is true that the situation has become a bit messy. And I think for me as a lecturer in public administration, these are the issues that we are having while researching and teaching on how we can improve our public service. When we joined the civil service in the 1980s, they would come to the university. By then, we had only one university. They would take the cream. Those would get with the upper second and first classes. And they would recruit them on merit and induct them and then transfer them or post them to various stations, both in local governments and central governments. Like for my example, I was in central government as the under president's office. I was seconded as assistant district commissioner to Apache district in 1987. But now, over time, I think, given that even Uganda Bureau of Statistics has the audacity to report that a certain percentage, 35%, that's a huge number of public service accessing jobs through bribery. And also supplementary to that, all new newspapers, new vision monitor, and so on, and including on our radio stations and TV stations, they're always reporting these cases of people in various districts and the government agencies being asked for bribes to join the public service. So this is in public limelight, and I think it has contributed to poor service delivery, to defeating the purpose of meritocracy, which is Singapore used to be what it is, and yet it doesn't have enough resources like the Pearl of Africa has. So it has become a cancer. And you know, when you try to get a job, it becomes transactional, not transformative public service delivery that the developing countries like Uganda need. And so we end up with the by default promoting corruption, because if you come in the public service by buying a job, it means now your main focus will be to recover the investment you put into to get the job at the expense of serving the public for which you are employed to pay. Because public servants get money that is collected from taxes from the public. And in the case of Uganda, we have in rural areas 80% of people who are poor and vulnerable. So they end up lacking services because these public servants who access offices in the wrong way end up focusing on benefiting themselves and these individuals at the expense of delivering effective and efficient collective public services.
Right. I mean, we're definitely going to talk about the repercussions of all of this in detail. But still, with you, Tom, how do you think Uganda got here? What has led to this? Because if I got you correctly, what you're saying is that during your time, this wasn't really the norm. So what has changed?
Yeah, when we joined the service, that's when this present government had come in. And it was a revolutionary government out of the Bush War. They were more committed and patriotic in terms of reversing the bad history of Uganda, where we had political chaos during Obote's regime, the 1966 crisis, and 1971 when Idi Amin took over. The new revolutionary government wanted to reverse the bad ills of the past regimes. Like we inherited a good public service after colonialism. Actually, Uganda was created in the 1960s as having one of the best public services in Africa. And by then, people were getting living wage and people were being recruited on merit. So when Idi Amin comes in 1971, the army took over. It was a military regime. Most qualified people who were loyal to the past governments were ended up in exile. Some of them were murdered, and others were sacked from the jobs. And even the Indians who were also in the public service and managing businesses were sent out in 1972 by Idi Amin. So the public service collapsed. And when Idi Obote came in 1980, he tried to reconstruct the country by also now promoting military recruitment in public service. But now we had gone through all this political time, and we brought in multipartism. Now, when multipartism came in, you find that even at local government level, you'd find people appointed politically instead of merit.
The report highlights education and health as the most affected sectors. Tell us more about the long-term risks of having underqualified personnel in these critical areas.
If you have doctors who are not qualified, sometimes they do surgeries, and they forget even the instruments they have used in the people's bodies. Sometimes they prescribe the wrong medicines, so they make the situation of the patients worse. Some of them even have private clinics near the public hospitals. So they would prefer to people to go to their private clinics and then recommend for them to go to their drug shops. So you find that even drugs which are made for government hospitals end up in going to the private drug shops. So all those are many, many problems associated with incompetences where people end up occupying those sensitive professional spaces in the health sector. Now, equally in the education sector, you find amongst us, lecturers, professors, and so on, if you find people who have papers which are not authentic, then you find that the quality of the training they give to the students or participants is also low. So you end up producing participants who cannot respond to the market. And in terms of producing good teachers, for example, good doctors, good economists, and so on. So at the whole thing has an effect that spreads over to other sectors, which the education sector is supposed to produce the human resources that are supposed to be drivers or engines of development for developing countries like us. So the competences that are reflected at the level of recruitment, promotion, based on patronage and bribery, cannot produce good people who can produce good human resources that can help the country.
Okay, and Frank, it's affecting so many sectors, isn't it? Can you share some examples of how unqualified hires have affected public services?
Well, it is so grave. Cutting across all sectors, yes, it's true. They pointed out these key sectors here that are most affected. That's the health sector and the education sector. Now, according to the National Institute of Public Health reports of 2020, maternal mortality was recorded at 189 per 100,000 live births. And this does not exclude infant mortality. So these nurses or health workers that are recruited with fake qualifications are the ones that actually that cause deaths to mothers, you know, while giving birth, and even babies. And we keep having such reports, especially in rural areas, in those poorly facilitated health centers. So many mothers die, and we believe this could be one of the reasons. Those that are not trained. They could be accountants who are working in health centers. They could be journalists who are working in health centers. And how they got there is definitely through, is obviously through bribery. So that is how bad it is. And also, many Ugandans die from preventable diseases, including say malaria, diarrhea, respiratory infections, and other health complications, which experts attribute to inconsistent health service coverage. But they forget that these unqualified personnel, one of the drivers of these problems we are facing in communities, deaths, and also some illnesses. So those are some of the problems we face. And also, a few years ago, AD, if I'm to inform you this, Uganda Medical and Dental Practitioners Council revoked a practicing license of a health worker who was found guilty of negligence. He left a face towel, you can imagine, a face towel in the uterus of a mother during cesarean section. Mm. So that is how bad it can get. So those are some of the repercussions we are getting. Mm. The health in the education sector is equally bad because the failure rates reported by various organizations are usually high. You know, we have national examinations every year at all different levels. So the failure rates, you know, keep increasing year in, year out. And they really, you know, point out problems like unqualified teachers or personnel in the education sector. And this could be one of the reasons why we're having, you know, failure rates in education. And you find some of the teachers that are not qualified to teach, no wonder have, you know, other businesses they conduct, like like motorbike transport. Others have Rolex or donut stalls. So after teaching, they go do their businesses. It's because they are not qualified to be in those positions. No wonder they say teaching is a calling. So definitely they're not into, they're in the wrong profession. That's where we're seeing all these problems coming from.
I'm just wondering, Frank, how the government plans to deal with this. Are we talking about naming and shaming? Have any officials or civil servants been named or prosecuted so far? What concrete measures are being taken, you believe, to help tackle this problem?
Yes, naming and shaming is one of them. Of recent, we've seen names published in the media all over places. They give a list of about 100 nurses and midwives holding fake qualifications. And you can imagine how long they've worked and how many problems they have put to innocent people in communities. So that's one of the reasons. It doesn't end there. We've also seen reports, some of them being prosecuted in the courts of law. We've seen them. And government also has put in place institutions like the State House anti-corruption monitoring unit. It's doing a great job. You know, it does monitor the performance of these health units across the country. We also have the IGG, which is the Inspectorate of Government, which is a body mandated to, you know, to oversee corruption cases or corruption performances across the country. We've seen such bodies coming out, even these institutions themselves, for instance, the Uganda Nurses and Midwives Council, and also doctors also have councils that, you know, they have activities within themselves where they supervise and then check the standards of their practitioners, whether they are up to the required national standards. So we've seen, yes, you know, action being done in one way or the other, though it's not enough. We need more to be done because many of these workers don't only have fake qualifications, but they use someone else's academic papers. Say, I could be, Eddie, you could be a doctor, and your papers are in my possession. They're the ones I'm using to operate, you know, in a hospital or right. in a school. So that's how bad it can get. So enough is not enough is being done, although we appreciate the little that is being implemented to put the house to order.
Right. Tom, something is being done, but clearly not enough. What more do you think is needed? What kind of policies, what kind of structural changes could help prevent bribery in recruitment going forward?
Yeah, like now for education, of course, we have the Health Service Commission, which of course has been also to some extent professionalized to make sure that it harmonizes the recruitment and the promotional processes. The framework that we have is not strong enough. For example, the regulations that govern public servants, you know, it's very easy. You can enter the public service through all those processes of bribery and whatever. But the law protects public servants. So long as they have entered, even one time when the president had just won this previous election in 2021, he went to a place called Nakaseke. He found the whole health facility when the health people were not there. And he ordered for the dismissal. But they were protected by the law, by the public service rules. So sometimes there's some sense of impunity, and the government needs to reform some of these regulations so that some of these public servants who are doing wrong things are brought to book. Then we, like in the education service sector, we have the National Council of Higher Education, like now for us, there are nowadays being routine checks, audit checks, to see how well qualified the staff are, whether the facilities we are using for teaching up to the standards of best practices and so on. So there are ongoing reforms, but as Frank has just said, they are not yet strong enough to make sure that some of these cases and anomalies are addressed. But I think it's a work in progress. And I would also say that it is us as educationists, for example, to maintain high standards, norms, and values that consider the public service as a vocation, as a calling. It should not be a transactional space where people exchange money for jobs and so on. The public service like that, the one we have in Singapore, should be want to be benchmarked where meritocracy is first and other right. things come later. And if right. we have to develop, that's the way to go.
And Frank, I believe the media would have to play a key role in all of this, right? What can we expect from the media, Frank, in helping push for transparency to help reform the public sector?
Well, like we say here, okay, that it begins with you. Everyone has a role to play here. The media definitely, for us, we pass over the information to the public. But of course, it's also upon those individuals to see that they check themselves. We have a program in schools, like patriotism, where they teach people to love themselves and love their country. We, as media, we of course push this harder to make sure that the message reaches everyone, and because it comes with integrity. Once one has integrity within themselves, which is also a component of patriotism, definitely it will instill in themselves, and they know that this is what they're supposed to do, and this is a no-go zone. Having fake qualifications to do a service is wrong, because you're endangering people's lives and endangering your country by involving yourself in such activities. So the media, definitely, we are the voice, will do a part to see that, you know, we voice out, we publish, we broadcast all these vices and also give them solutions to clear this mess and have a better country.
Right. Thank you very much, both of you. Dr. Tom Alfred Wanyakara, lecturer in public policy at Uganda Management Institute, and also Frank Yiga, DW correspondent in Kampala, Uganda. Many thanks.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Uganda is home to one of the world's youngest populations, and the youth unemployment rate is already over 40% by some estimates. This is not just a statistic. It's a harsh reality that deeply frustrates the young people of Uganda. Let's hear from some of them.
I think that has become sort of like a culture that has been embraced, which is very wrong, because you study knowing so well that you understand what you're doing, you're qualified, but also at the back of your mind, you know it's very hard to get a job. And yet you find that there are people who are actually not qualified, but went through back door and got their way into an office. And that one affects a lot of service delivery. They are not efficient. You feel you studied, you have the skills, you have the knowledge, but then just because you don't have money to pay the bribes, for us women, we are sexually harassed. And when you refuse to give in, then there is no job for you. And yet you studied, you're qualified, you have everything. So we are truly disappointed.
So I was in a WhatsApp group, which is to advertise for jobs, government jobs. I applied for the jobs. I got called for interviews. And instead of an actual interview, they started asking for money to get that particular position. And when I told them I didn't have that money to get that position, they suggested maybe getting the job and paying for that position on your first salary. And I also realized that many of the people that applied for were not also able to get those jobs.
I did social works and social administration, but my dear, getting a job is a very, very hard thing. If you do not bribe to enter, be it government or private, you cannot get a job. Some of us have worked. I finished campus 4 years ago, but I have worked and worked to look for a job. Everywhere you go, they say, do you have something small? Which means, do you have money to bribe to go? At least to go from one level of an interview to another level to see, at least you can enter. But even when you enter, someone tells you, the first payment that you get, half is mine, half is yours. So you find very many people out there very stressed. Some of them got tired. You walk, your shoes get old. You're still looking for one job. You can't find it. So me, as for me, I decided I want to start a business online.
It's in the culture of Ugandans. We like to find an easiest way in when it comes to employment, because after all, the number of jobs available has never equated to the number of students or number of graduates ever, because we have more graduates than there are jobs available. We go back to something that is, of course, eating up this country and I think the entire African continent, the corruption bit of it. So you're going to look for someone who knows you. If they don't know you, you're going to look for someone who knows someone who can accept to be paid, so that you get the job. Corruption is always bad for someone who has not benefited from it. The most important thing is who actually benefits from it. So the person that is giving the bribe is actually more willing than the person receiving it.
Corruption in hiring isn't unique to Uganda. It's a global issue that needs urgent attention. From Nigeria's ghost workers to bribery scandals in Kenya and beyond, the pattern is clear. When jobs are sold, citizens lose twice. First to bad governance, and then to poor services. And it's not just about morality. It's about development. Because without a merit-based system, how can trust be restored and public services improved? Many sectors are hit hard, leading to unqualified hires in critical roles, collapsed buildings, poor roads, and compromised healthcare. So it's a big deal. What do you think? Share your thoughts and experiences on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow DW Africa on YouTube so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.